Hello, friends, and welcome to ChristianLandmark.com. My name is Shahid Jurgen, and we're delighted to bring you this very special interview today. With me is Brother Keith Thompson, evangelist working with the Armidale Church of Christ in Western Australia. And Keith has agreed to sit down with us today and talk about the history of the church here in Western Australia, his own background and how he got into gospel preaching. And if we have time, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the exciting news from around the country in the field of foreign evangelism. So we hope that you'll enjoy this interview and discussion, as we are always excited to bring you news from around the country, around the world, concerning the work of the church. So Keith, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's very, very, you're very welcome, Shahid. We're very happy to have you here in Australia.
Yes.
And I'm very happy to be able to talk here on Christian Landmark.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. It is great to be here in Australia, and this is my second time to visit this part of the mm-hmm. world. Love being here, love being with the brethren here. We've talked a little bit about how the church came to be in Armidale,
yep.
how the church was started here in Western Australia, and I'd love for you to share some of that history with us today.
Okay, well, the church in Armidale started around 1984 with the work of Brother Jerry Cutter. And he came here, he was looking for people who were interested in the gospel, and he found a couple, the Hosking family, who lived in Armidale, and then they started worshiping there with just Jerry and his late wife Pat and the Hoskings, and they met in local council buildings. But Jerry had moved from Kalgoorlie, where he had first come to preach the gospel.
And where is that in relation to Armidale?
Kalgoorlie is a gold mining town, famous for having the richest square mile in the world. And that's where the church first came in Western Australia. Very interesting story how it came about. There was a brother who worked for the Hughes Tool Company, previously owned by the famous Howard Hughes,
mm.
who was an engineer designing drilling equipment. And he was asked by his boss to come out and to the gold mine to help set up this drilling equipment. And he said it wasn't possible because he had nowhere to worship. Well, this man had told him, it's okay, you can take Hughes money, buy a ticket and fly to Malaysia if you need to.
Wow.
But this man, Brother McFarlane, wasn't gonna take just the easy route. So when he arrived in Sydney, he used the phone book that we used to have back then and looking for Churches of Christ in Western Australia. He had no luck. But then when the plane arrived, took him to Perth, he once again did that. And he found one phone number that he couldn't get it answered. Well, it's an 8-hour drive to Kalgoorlie.
From Perth.
Uh-huh. And the man who was taking him, he was quite a character himself. And he took him to Perth. Now, they still had another 4 hours drive from Kalgoorlie to get to the mine site.
Wow.
But they stopped for lunch in Kalgoorlie, and Brother McFarlane worked the phones again. And he ended up speaking to a minister of a congregation, and what Brother McFarlane was looking for was a Church of Christ that used one cup and one loaf. And the answer he got, well, there is a maverick that I know that you might be able to speak to. So they went to this man's house, and this man was is a man by the name of John Burt, and they eventually made contact with him after waiting for several hours for him to come home. And after...
Remind me what year this was?
This would have been 83,
okay.
1983,
okay.
So quite a while back now. And so they spent an hour on the driveway before Brother McFarlane was invited in. And another 2 hours discussing the question. All the time, this man who was the driver was waiting for them and quite happy to do that. And it was decided, this was a family who were members of the Church of Christ but had been using multiple cups. And they agreed, for Brother McFarlane's sake, that they would worship with one cup while he was there. So that meant that he just required to travel the 4 hours to Kalgoorlie to worship with
Still his. Better than driving all the way down to Perth and catching a flight up to Malaysia.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Exactly. So, anyway, his time in Perth was up, but his company wanted him to go back and spend 2 or 3 months with his wife. And so he approached the brethren at the 21st Street congregation in Oklahoma City about this opportunity. And they decided that they would send out Jerry Carter and Bob Laddermilk with the view that possibly that Bob Laddermilk would come with his family and work there as an evangelist. Now that wasn't quite how it worked out. Bob wasn't able to do that, but Jerry ended up moving over with his wife Pat, and they were working in Kalgoorlie for a year. And Brother McFarlane, I've got some papers that he wrote. He said there was up to 30 people in attendance.
Wow.
in the church there. At that time, Bruce Word and his wife Linda moved over to help with the work. And
were they from Oklahoma also?
They were from Denver at that stage.
Oh, okay.
They're
okay.
In Denver. Jerry then decided to move down to Perth, the large center. Kalgoorlie is just a small town.
Right.
And he thought there was more opportunities in Perth.
Yeah.
And so the Words stayed in Kalgoorlie, and Jerry moved down to Perth, where he met this family from Armidale. Interestingly,
I think probably a lot of Americans don't realize just how huge Western Australia is, but how most of the population is just centered around the Perth area.
Well, at the moment, the entire population of Western Australia is 2.5 million.
Uh-huh.
2.25 are in Perth.
Yeah.
And so we're a vast state.
Yeah.
But with a small population outside of the capital city.
Okay.
So the family I told you about, they'd actually come to know the Church of Christ by visiting their family in Kalgoorlie.
Okay.
Who lived next door to the meeting place where the church was meeting in Kalgoorlie.
Big state, small world.
Exactly. And so Jerry was given their contact details, they met up, they decided to worship, and then in a short time, the husband and wife were baptized.
Wow.
And became the first members here in Armidale.
Okay, so did they live in Perth or they live in Armidale?
They lived in Armidale.
Okay.
So that was why Jerry moved from where he was to Armidale.
And what year was that?
That was 84.
84.
Yeah.
And so the church has existed in Armidale consistently since that time.
Yes indeed. And Jerry continued to visit for many, many years after he went back.
So other than Brother Jerry, and you mentioned Brother Bob Laddermilk, who else has come to this part of the world to do evangelistic work over the years?
Okay, so Bruce and Linda Wood came out to be with Jerry. When Jerry left, Glenn and Reba Osmond came to replace Jerry, and they came to Armidale. Now, they would go up and visit the brethren in Kalgoorlie, but that congregation was shrinking down to live. Finally, there was 2 very, very old members.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And
was that just because the gold mining was sort of coming to fruition, coming to its end?
It was just maybe the excitement that they first had was no longer. This is before my time.
Yeah.
And so I don't really know the whys. Excuse me. These people left, but. It was a stepping stone for the work in Armidale.
Sure, yeah. And what year was it that Glenn and Reba came?
They came, it would have been in, I'm thinking, 86.
86.
Yeah.
And how long did they stay?
They stayed for 3.5 years, and their youngest daughter,
Sephra,
was born here.
Yes.
So we're very proud of her as our fellow Australian.
Oh, of course. So, Brother Glenn, his family, has any other American preacher or family moved here to live here?
David and Paula Osborne were here for 2 years.
Okay.
After after Glenn and Reba left, there was about a year or so where we had no American evangelists, and the stands moved over for a short time to Armadale.
And but then, of course, since then, many preachers have come to hold meetings.
Oh, we've had many, many preachers. We've had Mike Criswell, Clint DeFrance. Mm-hmm. We've had, now it's really taxing my brain to think of them all. But we've had many, many come over yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. So now, church has been here about over 30 years, well over 30 years. What do you think that the future of the church in Western Australia looks like? You know, for a lot of Americans who don't necessarily know very much about Australian culture or the reception of the gospel for people who live in this part of the world, maybe, you know, as you think about the next 10, 20, or 30 years, mm-hmm. what do you think that the church looks like here in Western Australia?
Well, that's a really good question, and it really is a case of looking into a crystal ball. But I believe in making plans and trusting in the Lord that His will come about. One of the exciting things about working here is that the congregation is very evangelistic. We have a goal, a plan, to spread the gospel locally, nationally, and internationally. And we've been involved in evangelistic works in around the Perth area and beyond, in the major eastern state cities and overseas as well. About 4 years ago, we had one of our plans come to fruition. We had set ourselves a goal to establish another congregation in the Perth area within 3 years, and so we were working towards that. Now, it didn't work out how we planned, but there was a congregation started in the small country town of Narrogin, which is about 2 hours drive away mm-hmm. from us, and we continue to help that little congregation going. So we envision the Lord, if He permits us, helping us to start new congregations elsewhere in this state and elsewhere in Australia. We've got a huge field
yeah.
that's waiting for workers to go out.
Absolutely. And one of the exciting things too about the church in Armadale is you have a whole crop of young people who are coming of age now. They're entering adulthood or in their early 20s, and they are Christians and seem excited about the work, and that's very exciting. I mean, you can see the life cycle of a lot of congregations when they start to skew older. Mm-hmm. It seems that things maybe are coming to the end.
Yeah.
But that doesn't seem to be the case at all here in Armadale.
No. And I think the future looks bright here. As the world looks at things, we're small.
Yeah.
But the emphasis now is on the mega churches.
Right.
But I don't read anywhere in the Bible that that's God's emphasis. God's emphasis is on faithful Christians. And I tell the brethren here, you sometimes feel that the church is small. At the time that God first went to Noah, I asked him, how many people were faithful in the world? Generally, they say 8.
Yeah.
No. At that stage, there was only
one. We only know of one.
Exactly.
Right.
But he converted his wife, he converted his children, who weren't even born at that stage.
Right.
And that was enough.
Yeah.
And so as long as we remain faithful and are working like Noah did, that's enough.
Yeah.
And so I feel very positive about the future for the work here in Australia.
Before we move on to our next topic, one other question I wanted to ask you about the work specifically to Armadale is something you've been doing recently. A little over a year ago, or maybe well over a year ago now, maybe close to 2 years ago, the church here was working to invite a young preacher from America to come and spend some time here and train with you.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron and Anna Boone were the first to take up that a cause. They came here and stayed for about 1 year.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right.
And now we have Stuart Crouch mm-hmm. from the Oklahoma City area who's yep. here. What motivated you to want to reach out to the young men who are kind of up-and-coming preachers to come and work with you in this endeavor?
Well, there's two reasons for that. The first one is, you know, we know how the Lord has taught us that the church is to grow. In 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, Paul says to the young preacher Timothy, "The things you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these teach to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So part of my role as an evangelist is to train young men who desire to preach the gospel. And so Aaron and Anna came out and were just wonderful. We loved them to bits, and they dedicated the year to their work. They're now working in the Dallas area, mm-hmm. and things are going really great for them. And that's just thrilling for me. And now we have Stuart Crouch here, and he's following in their footsteps, doing great things. The brethren just love him to bits. And he really is helping me, which comes to the second of the two reasons. With the small congregation that I told you about, mm-hmm. in the small country
in Narragin,
mm-hmm. They have no men who can lead at this
a brand new church.
Brand new church. And so we in the Armidale Church are going down every Sunday to really hold services.
Right.
For them. And we are small. And so having someone who's working with me, training to be an evangelist, and then able to go down and help in Narragin, helps the work there hugely, helps me, and it gives them that extra experience,
which absolutely
in a larger congregation they wouldn't get.
No, I mean, it myself, growing up in a smaller congregation in Ventura, California, there were many times where we had folks who were traveling, and so the whole service had to be conducted by one or two men. Mm-hmm. And so I had that experience as a teenager and feel like that was invaluable.
Yeah.
To know how to lead in every part of the worship service, how to conduct the Lord's Supper, and how to hold forth with even just a small group. So I can see how that experience for a young man who's up and coming to come here and to do that with you would be definitely a wonderful experience to have.
Yeah, and as an evangelist, we'll often go into new areas.
Yeah.
And we have to do everything.
Right.
Now, no one's an expert in every aspect of the worship. They may say, well, I'm not a song leader. But if you're the only man there, you lead.
You are the song leader.
And you know what? You do the best you can.
Yes.
And God doesn't ask any more than
that. That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. I appreciate all of that history and information. Having spent a little bit of time here, I feel very optimistic about the future of the church in Western Australia. And so what I'd like to do now is just change gears a little bit with you. Because I think a lot of people have heard of you, Keith, in America. A lot of brethren have heard of you. A lot of brethren maybe have had opportunities even to hear you preach on the trips you've taken to America. You've preached at different places, held some meetings. You've preached at Oklahoma New Year's meeting, for example. But maybe some people don't know much about how you became a Christian. You were not raised in the Lord's Church like many of us Americans were. And how it was that you decided to become a gospel preacher. So first, maybe one shocking piece of news for people is the fact that you're not even a native Australian. So where do you come from? Where do you come from? And how did you end up here in Australia, in Western Australia?
This is true. I am not a native Australian, but I do have citizenship, so I feel fairly safe.
Good, yes.
So my family were Scottish. All of my family are Scottish, apart from me. I was born in a little country called Northern Rhodesia, which no one knows about now, but is currently called Zambia.
Right.
And
South Central Africa.
Yeah. Exactly. And my family were Presbyterian. I actually have my baptismal certificate for when I was a baby, for when they took me to the little church there in the town of Ndola and Northern Rhodesia. My family moved here when I was 12 years old.
Okay.
And for a while we went to the Presbyterian Church. Then that melded with the Congregational and the Methodist Church to become the Uniting Church,
which is sort of a union of churches here in Australia. I don't know how common that is in other places. I certainly have not heard that in America.
Well, in 40 years, it's still called the Uniting Church. So that might tell
They're
you something.
Still working through it.
They're working through it. And so that was, I was active in the Uniting Church, especially in the, I guess, with the youth. But my chosen profession at that stage, I wanted to be work on farms. And so I ended up moving down south, a long way away from anywhere, and had some unpleasant experiences with denominations. I wasn't raised in their denomination, and I literally wasn't accepted.
Wow.
So that kind of put me off a little bit. So time went on. I still had a faith, but was not as serious as I knew I ought to be, even in that faith. And I was working as a farm manager in 1984. And I was traveling through a national park late at night with a brand new car, not a month old. It was a dark, grizzly night, and a kangaroo hopped out. Now, the last thing you need to do with a kangaroo, it's a bit like in the States with deer.
Yes.
You don't swerve.
Yes.
But this car was under a month old.
Right.
I swerved, and I hit this massive tree doing 110 kilometers an hour, 65 miles
right.
an hour. And I remember, I don't know whether I spoke it or whether it was in my mind, but I had this little prayer, if you like.
Yeah.
Lord, not now. Yeah. I knew I wasn't ready.
What year was this?
84.
84.
Anyway, the Lord was kind. He wrapped the car around a tree, and I was trapped in the car. But I survived.
Yeah.
After a while, the ranger came, called an ambulance, and I ended up down in hospital in this little town of Albany.
Mm-hmm.
I was in hospital for nearly 4 months with my broken leg, and because of that, then I had to learn how to walk again. And so I was over a month recuperating, learning that. But when I got out of hospital, I remembered what I had said, and I determined that I would go and do the right thing.
Seek the Lord.
I didn't know what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But I saw an advertisement for a Church of Christ, and on the bottom of it, it said non-denominational.
Mm.
Now, that means something different now.
Right.
But then that was used by Churches of Christ to say that we're not, like, there is a denomination here that they call themselves the Associated Church of Christ. I didn't know what it meant, but I'd had a bad run-in with denominations, so
yeah.
I thought, oh, well, I'll go and check it out. I heard the gospel.
And this was in Albany.
In Albany.
Albany,
sorry.
Correction taken, I understand.
And I was baptized there in the Southern Ocean. And you know, there's nothing between the coast of Albany and Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was baptized in 1984.
And so while this is happening simultaneously up in northern parts of the state, the work is getting started with Jerry and other efforts.
Yeah, these were all happening simultaneously.
So you were baptized and started worshiping at this church in Albany, right? Did I say it correctly this time?
Yeah, well, let's go back. I was baptized the week before, or the Sunday before I started back at work. I started the following day. But I was never taught the importance of worship. So I would occasionally attend this little congregation. Now, at the same time, I had met this young nurse in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
When I got out of hospital, we started dating, and we married.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my lovely wife, Anne. And she was doing nursing training in Perth. And so when we got married, I changed jobs and managed a farm just south of Perth, which turns out to be 15 minutes away from the building where the Armidale Church of Christ met.
Mm.
In time, we found an advertisement for that, went there. Glenn Osborne was preaching there. He taught me about true worship, and he baptized my wife Anne.
So they were living here? Were they living here already?
Yes,
yeah.
Were.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this was in the mid-1980s when all this happened.
Yes, it was.
That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And you all have been members of the Armidale congregation ever since, right?
Ever since.
Yeah.
Apart from times
when you've
lived
overseas.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you almost to the day when all this happened, Anne was baptized exactly 7 days before our son Jamie was born.
Oh, really?
And so that would have been in 1988.
Yeah.
And so we probably first came to the church in Armidale in around December, January, 87.
Okay, okay. So you've learned from Glenn about scriptural worship, assembling with the church in Armidale. You're still working as a...
Working as a farm manager.
Farm manager. Mm-hmm. How did you go from that life with a now a newborn baby boy into deciding you wanted to become a gospel preacher?
Well, Glenn and Reba are the most wonderful Christians I can think of. And they constantly invited Anne and myself to go to their house for a meal and a Bible study. And so we would do that several times a week. And we wouldn't get home till after midnight, and I'd get up early in the morning to start work. I developed the ability to power nap during my lunch break just so I could survive. And so I was studying with Glenn a lot and learning a lot. Now, the farm that I was managing was closing in 1988. Mm. Yeah. And I was offered a job way out in the country managing another farm. But that would take us away from the church. So I knew that there had to be a change of some sort. And Glenn said to me, "Have you thought about preaching?"
As Glenn is wont to do.
As he is wont to do. And I said, "No." He says, "Well, you need to think about it because you would be good at it." He encouraged me greatly. And so that's how I started thinking about it. And so when the farm was closing, we packed up and moved down to stay with Glenn and Reba for about a month as I studied with them even more down there.
So remind me what year Glenn and Reba moved back to the States?
That would be
89. And did you start preaching full time then?
I started preaching. What happened was we stayed with Glenn and Reba when Jamie was a little baby for a month, and then he had organized a preaching tour in the U.S.
Okay, okay.
And so we spent 3 months driving around, going to different congregations. We were so warmly received. I was a very green young man with just a small bundle of sermons that mm-hmm. Anne learnt by heart.
Yes, well, I've definitely been there.
And through that, and the letter that Glenn had written, there were congregations that agreed to support me.
Okay.
And so Glenn and Reba, once we came back, Glenn and Reba were still in the country for a few months. Sephra was born, mm-hmm. and then they moved back, and I was kind of left on my own to do the learning myself.
Yeah, find your way in the dark.
Yeah.
Well, this is all great, and appreciate you sharing a little bit about yourself and how you came into gospel preaching. I think a lot of what you said, you know, I can relate to. When I was in my early 20s, I had not really thought about preaching as a profession, but I was encouraged by some brethren whom I loved and respected to consider it. So I think that's wonderful and a great message for all of our older preachers and older brethren to find those young men who have some talent and encourage them. Mm-hmm. It might be that they've just never even thought about it,
never
even considered it as a possibility. Mm-hmm. So that's wonderful. Well, I'd like to change gears one more time. Mm-hmm. And you live, of course, in Western Australia, have for a long time now, and worked here with the Armidale congregation for a long time. But in addition to that, you've had a wonderful privilege that some of us have also had to be able to do work in other countries, in many parts of the world, even living different places overseas. Yeah. So if you would mind just spend a couple minutes talking about how you got into that, how you became acquainted with doing work overseas, and some of the places maybe that you and Anne and Jamie have lived mm-hmm. and done work.
Yeah, okay. Well, I started getting an interest in work in other countries. Now, for a lot of people, Australia, of course, is a foreign country, and it's very much like a foreign work, even living here. But Jerry Carter had encouraged me to look beyond the borders of Australia, and he invited me to work with him for a little while in Penza, Russia.
What year was this?
This would be in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And this was at a time in my preaching where I really needed to get together with another preacher and study and work with him, get more experience. And so this is a great opportunity. So I was over there for...
Now this would have been the very early days of the work in Russia, is that right?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. And so I had a great privilege of sitting at Jerry's feet, hearing him preach, and then studying with him through the day. And that led to a request from another congregation that was close to the Penza congregation in Saransk, Russia. And they asked if I would be willing to come and work with them for 6 months. So I contacted my very patient wife, Anne, and she agreed. And we moved with our young son. Mm-hmm. He was about 8 years old then, mm-hmm. and we moved to the town of Saransk in Russia, which was very challenging. Communism had fallen at that stage, but this town was in a semi-autonomous republic that had voted in a communist government, local government. So nothing really had changed in that town as far as that goes. But we worked with a church there. We had some success. We had quite a number of baptisms. And that was a tremendous experience and opened my eyes to, you know, there are people all over the world who are needing to hear the gospel.
Right.
And so it was a great privilege to be able to do that. Since then, I've worked with the brethren in Malaysia. I got involved in that work through the encouragement of Mike Criswell, mm-hmm. And we really, really loved that. Then I was asked to visit Africa, once again by Jerry Carter.
Right.
And he asked me to visit Malawi, where he was working at that stage. And during that visit, he had received a request to go to the East African country of Tanzania. This preacher had studied himself out of multiple cups and was looking for someone to help him.
Mm-hmm.
So during the visit that Anne and I had with Jerry and Linda, Jerry and I made a side trip up to Tanzania and found this man who was very keen and very, very interested in receiving help there. So for the next year and a half, maybe even 2 years, I would go fairly regularly for a month at a time to Arusha, Tanzania. And Alan Makita and I would work together, and we had a great working rapport. And in time it was organized for Anne and I to move over there for a three-year period.
Jamie now is an adult and
Jamie's
on his own.
Finishing, he's in university.
Okay.
He's about to graduate from university. So time has moved on.
Yes.
And so he fully encouraged us to make this move, and he could look after himself.
Yeah.
So that was a wonderful thing.
And so what was that experience like, living in Tanzania for 3 years?
Again, our eyes were opened to foreign work and what it was all about. You go over to these countries, and you understand that I was raised in a colonial period in Africa.
Right.
And my family, my parents, continued to have a colonial mindset.
Right.
And that is where these natives
right.
need people to help them.
Yeah.
To look after them in a fatherly sort of way.
Yeah, yeah, yes. A great shepherd.
And I feel tremendously privileged to be able to have lived in Africa when they had their own independence, where this was not part of the makeup of the country. They make mistakes, of course they do. Every country does.
Yeah.
But the eye-opening thing was that this very same colonial attitude was happening in the churches.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't called colonials, they were called missionaries.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And they had missions. And so the Baptists, the Anglicans, the Catholics,
right,
all of the major denominations had these large missions where they would have local people come in. They weren't called, they didn't call them natives, but they treated them in just the same way.
Mm.
And there was also a large Multiple Cups Church of Christ mission in the same town where I was, where I would hear that preachers had to go in every beginning of the month with their hands out to get paid in their hand by the missionary.
Mm.
And I formed very firm feelings about this idea. If we go into a foreign work, we have to go in as evangelists,
yeah,
as ministers of the gospel. Now, the term minister means servant. We have to go to serve the people. We're not over anyone.
Right.
And we have to work with that attitude. I am often called a missionary, but I stop people and say, I'm not a missionary. I'm a preacher. And often there are African preachers with me. I say, just like this man.
Yeah.
I'm a preacher just like him. And I think that's the attitude is really important, that we have that attitude. We don't follow the mistakes of old, but we look that we're going to help autonomous congregations if they want.
Yeah. Well, that's great information, and certainly necessary for us to be thinking about. It seems like in the past couple of years, we've had some great successes with new work starting in countries where we've never been. Of course, we've been in Africa for a few generations, mm-hmm, now, in the Philippines since the 1980s, India, the work in India is quite self-sufficient. But we're in new places now, places that, yeah, you've had a hand in helping to get started, like, mm-hmm, Bangladesh.
Yes.
In the Middle East, in Dubai,
yep,
and Ajman, and, mm-hmm, Cairo, Egypt,
yes,
there's a work started there. Indonesia, there's work happening there. And so it seems like there's a lot of excitement right now.
There is.
About doing evangelistic work in new places and in different countries. What do you think going forward are some needs that we need to be mindful of to help make sure these works are successful long term? And what are some things we need to be thinking about as we look to even other new places,
yeah,
to start works? We have people living in Korea now trying to get a work started. There's a new work in Cambodia. So as we look to more and more locations to try to do new evangelistic works, what are some things we need to be thinking about?
The number one thing is to see doors of opportunity that the Lord has given us. You know, there's a lot of negative press about the Muslim hordes.
Mm.
And we need to recognize just what that is. That's propaganda.
Right.
As Christians, we need to view these people as souls that need to be saved.
Yeah.
What would Jesus do if he came across a Muslim community? Now, there are a number of those congregations that you've mentioned that are new and thriving are in dominant Muslim countries.
Right.
In Tanzania, I'm very proud of the brethren in the city of Dar es Salaam. They're very evangelistic. A couple of years ago, they started a congregation in the island of Zanzibar that is 99% Muslim.
Wow.
I kind of joke and say there's 99% Muslim and one Church of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are opportunities. We don't need to fear these people, you see, because they're just men and women, the same as us.
They're people.
That love their children, that want better things for their children, and they are spiritual.
Yes, yeah.
They want to know the truth,
mm-hmm,
and we can take the truth to them. And so we're finding that in numerous places, there are people that have previously been Muslims who are coming to the Lord. And that's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
And going forward, I think we need to take away preconceived ideas. If we hear of an opportunity, I think we need to investigate it,
mm-hmm.
regardless of where it is.
Yeah.
And recognize it. In the New Testament, we often hear, in the book of Acts particularly, of open doors of opportunity. And I talk to people about this. You know, there's a door. You can do two things. You can either walk past the door, or you can walk through it and just see what the Lord has planned for us. And so we don't need to shy away from these opportunities. And you know, we need more young men who are willing to go into foreign lands. Now, going as a preacher into a foreign land, that's not a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work, especially if you're living there with your family. As you know, you give up a lot,
yeah.
But what you gain is far greater than anything that you might give up. You gain this idea of a broader work. Your mind is open to new ideas. You meet new people, and because of that, you're able to talk to people on different levels and in so many different ways.
Yeah.
And so going forward, we need, just like the Lord said, you know, the fields are white for the harvest. We need to pray for workers.
Yeah.
And I know there are young men who, just given that little bit of encouragement, can take hold of this work and move forward. And great things will continue to happen.
What advice would you give to a young man who's maybe just getting started, is interested in preaching, and is interested in doing this kind of evangelistic work? What advice would you give to someone in that situation?
What I say to Aaron, and what I continue to say to Stuart, and anyone who listens to me, is if you have an opportunity to go and preach.
Yeah.
Now, in the States, there are a lot of large and exciting congregations, but you don't get very many opportunities to preach there because there's a number of teachers.
Mm.
But there also are a lot of very small, little congregations that are looking for people to help them, for people to preach there, and for looking for people to go do evangelism in their little community.
Yeah.
See, we can do the same sort of evangelism in our own communities.
Right.
And there are small congregations that are needing young men to go and help them and to preach for them.
Yeah.
This is what I would encourage them to do. Go find a good preacher to study with. Read your Bible. Read. Don't get bogged down in all other reading. Our textbook is the Bible.
Right.
The New Testament.
Yeah.
So spend time every day diligently reading the Bible, looking at how the Apostle Paul did evangelism, learn from him.
Yeah.
And will you know it all? No, you're never going to do that. I'm learning now. As we mentioned together just a little while before this interview, I continue to learn. It feels like I know less than I knew when I was a young man.
Yeah.
Young and brash.
Yes. Well, that's great, and appreciate all of that. You know, one of the things that, if I might just add one thing, you and I are also in a similar situation where when we got married, we weren't preachers, but we both were blessed to have wives who were supportive when we decided to get into that
yeah.
work.
Yeah.
And Anne, of course, has moved with you to strange and faraway mm-hmm. places, even bringing Jamie when he was young, and my wife is doing the same.
Yeah.
And so one piece of advice I try to give to young men too is to find that young woman who will support that work mm-hmm. and will be willing to go to places that might seem scary for a young family, but where there's potential, where there's opportunity, where the gospel can thrive if people will go and do the work.
Yeah, exactly. That's so important, to have a helpmate that will stand by you. And so when you look for a spouse, you've got to look for someone who puts God first.
Yeah.
And if you find if a young man finds a woman like that, he's found a good thing.
That's right. Well, thank you so much,
You're
Keith.
You're welcome.
Appreciate your time and all the work that you do for the gospel
thank
and
you.
For the Lord's kingdom. And we hope that everyone who has watched this interview will be encouraged and uplifted. There's just wonderful things happening all over the world as the work of the Lord is being done. And we encourage everyone, all of our viewers, to find some work that you can help to support. Contact a preacher and say, what can I do to make your work a little bit easier? And to encourage all of those young men and women at your congregations to consider preaching, to consider marrying a preacher for all of our young sisters in the church, and to do everything that we can to support and promote the gospel in our local areas and around the world. And we hope that this has been an encouragement in that effort. Thank you so much for being with us.